So just a couple of pieces kind of about this container. I do record some things. So when the red light is on, the recording is on. And in general, what I've seen in these groups that it's helpful to not record your shares so that there's more sense of a privacy. And so I will only record certain parts of what I share. Sometimes during a conversation with somebody, there's some little piece of that conversation where I kind of have a little light bulb that goes, oh, I'm going to talk for about 5 minutes, so let me record this part. And so I'll turn the recording on for that. So you can help me to remember to turn it off. And if the light is on, you wave your hand and say, I don't want to be recorded or something. I'm going to try to mostly just not be recording, but there are a few things that are helpful to record. And often following the guided meditation, I have some thoughts to offer. So I'm going to just reflect on that a little bit. And for those of you who missed the guided meditation, it is recorded and it will be posted. I'm creating a retreat for this week where the recordings from this week will be. I'll need to give you the code for that. I'll have to look that up on the computer, but I'll give that to you. I'll try to give that to you today so that you could listen today, Sue and Beatrice, for the instructions this morning. Come on in. Hi, young me. So the guided meditation this morning was on knowing thinking as thinking. And this is an important part of our meditation, to be able to recognize thoughts as thinking instead of being lost into the content of thinking. And in our meditation practice, we have the luxury in our formal meditation of letting go of the content. We don't actually need to be engaged in thinking about what we're going to do later while we're sitting. And so we can, get a little more curious about, well, there's a thought happening. So just that recognition, there is thinking happening right now. And having a little bit of curiosity about how that affects the body and mind. So that, over the weekend, I spoke about when you return from thinking, it's like, what's the landscape? What planet have you woken up on? That's kind of the flavor of that. You're curious about, how has this thinking affected the heart and mind? And even if the thinking goes on a little bit, if we're not so connected to engaging with the content, still we can feel the impact or the effect that it has on us. And so this is a learning. It's a skill that we can learn to be aware of thoughts. In our daily lives, I do like to teach this retreat as kind of an integrated teaching the practice for meditation, but then we spend the day going out into our lives. And so there's this back and forth of sitting engaged in a more formal practice and in our lives. And so the work with becoming aware of thoughts in our lives is a big part of our daily practice, so that we can see where our thoughts are coming from reactivity, where our thoughts are triggering reactivity, and begin to get curious about that. So the 50-50 practice or instruction that I brought in yesterday, and maybe even Saturday, around noticing the content of what's happening and how that content affects us. This is a way to work with thoughts in daily life. And it's much harder in daily life. It is much harder in daily life. And much of the time it may be, that you remember after the fact that wow, I really had a thought storm there and didn't really notice it. But in that moment, when you notice in that moment, oh, wow, I'm waking up now. So that's that noticing that moment of remembering. How are you now? And, you know, how did that thought storm land? What is here now in connection to that thought storm? So that you get a little bit of skill in noticing how thoughts affect us. Thoughts are incredibly powerful. A single word can affect your experience. Let's just play with that right now for just a moment. So just let yourself kind of just be quiet. Maybe close your eyes and just feel your body. Notice that you're aware. And relax and just receive what's happening. And we'll sit for just a 30, 40 seconds here. And then I'm going to drop in a couple of words. And just, you know, it's just like, let those words, what happens as you hear these words is basically what I'm curious about. Struggle. Confusion. Calm. Delight. So I'd like to hear from some of you what you noticed with those words coming in this part. So there's you know, kind of almost a stair step kind of process that goes on when we are exploring letting go and working with very strongly identified habits and patterns. You know, we can try to be with them, you know, to know them, to be with them with mindfulness. And yet sometimes that's not possible, and it kind of pulls us in. And we often do have a reactivity to that. It's like, I don't want to be pulled in. I you know, this is it's bad for me to be pulled in. And so, yes, there is some kind of a mixture of both compassion and aversion in that place. And if we, in recognizing, it's helpful to notice, yes, there's aversion to that, and there is some sensibility to not just staying hooked into that pattern. And so there's the, you know, the kind of the stepping away from it, even if there is a little bit of aversion there. It's like it allows us to use something skillful, like you said something like bringing compassion in. Use something skillful to help us let go of something unskillful, even if there is a little bit of aversion in the mix to go to the unskillful. So as an example for from my own practice of this, so self-hatred was a big part of my life. And, you know, almost surprisingly, I didn't know it was there really until I started meditating. But it was so clear that it was a huge part of the whole structure of how my personality worked. And in seeing it, it was quite painful and very sticky, often pulled me into it. And so, you know, I was learning some skills around how to step away from it when it was so sticky. And it was clear that I did not like the self-hatred. And yet, you know, so there. One of the big tools that I started using was investigation. Or it's like, and an identification with being a good investigator. So it's like, okay, I can bring my investigating skills to this, and that will give me some relief. And so, yes, there's some identification there. It's an identification to the practice. It's an identification to doing the practice, and so that you know, there's that has some stickiness to it, and it has some unskillfulness to it to be identified with that. And yet, what it was helping me do was let go of and work with something that was even more unskillful. So that's what I mean by a stair step. So, you know, the experience of the identification with the being a good meditator, I could see I was doing that. I could see that that was happening. But at the same time, I was also seeing, wow, this is so helpful. It's helping me let go of these really sticky patterns. And so I wasn't experiencing suffering around being a good meditator at that point. I was experiencing suffering around the self-hatred. And so as the processes kind of, you know, went on, the pattern of self-hatred began to diminish, the anger, all kinds of things connected with that. And at some point, as they began to weaken and weaken and weaken, the suffering around the clinging to the identity of being a good meditator, that began to be experienced as suffering. That was the time then to start kind of looking at that. So it's like, okay, so the next stair step is to recognize the suffering of that. And at that point, there was much more capacity to just know, well, this is what's happening. I don't have to run away from it. I don't have to fix it or change it. It's just this, of course this is happening. This was being conditioned while I was practicing. So also at that point there became more capacity to just meet when the self-hatred arose as self-hatred and not have to identify or attach as being someone who could do this well. She's like, oh, this is what's arising right now. Okay, we look at this right now. So there's sometimes things that we do have these mixed motivations as we use our tools to help us to come into balance. And that's okay. If there's attachment there, it'll get obvious at some point. And that's when to start looking at that. And so it's like, I sometimes say, let suffering be your guide around what to be knowing, what to be looking at. And so the suffering of the identification with using compassion as a tool in order to avoid something, you know, the suffering around that is maybe smaller or not as obvious as the suffering around the being pulled into the grief or the confusion. And so the mind begins to, using that tool, begins to let go of that deeper kind of suffering. At some point, the attachment to being able to do something there will show up. Yeah, and that then you get to look at that. And it's not a mistake, you know. This, to me, this is very much part of the way the practice can unfold. Yeah. This practice of describing experience, I mean, this is part of what we're doing here, is exploring, you know, not just talking about content, but And what we think about things, but trying to describe to go into what's actually happening in this moment. And in that case, what you described was, wow, as you were speaking, I was knowing there were so many different things happening at the same time. And a little bit, you pointed to a few of those things, like thoughts and beliefs and feelings. It's like, that's a description of what's happening. It's not kind of landing on, well, this is what it means, or this was the content of all of it. And this is an important way to learn how to be in this room. I mean, especially here, when I would like to have each of you describing your experience at some point. I mean, with this small of a group, many of you can share each day. Maybe even everybody can share each day, which is a real gift of the small size of this group. And the practice of sharing your experience, there's a couple of pieces to it. One, it's just to come each day and to know there's something I'd like you to share. I mean, maybe you could just assume you'll be sharing something from your experience each day. That has a power in terms of helping to increase the interest of the mindfulness through your day. It's like just knowing that, oh, I'm going to come back the next day and describe something. It can help to create a little bit of curiosity about what's being experienced. The other piece around it is the way that we speak about our experience. I just mentioned not so much going into the content, so not telling a big story about the whole scenario that's led to something. Have something's happened, and our habit of mind in conversation is that we have to give everybody the entire picture, who was there, what they said, all of the kind of details of that. And that's not where we're exploring in our meditative practice. We're more interested in dropping below all of that to how am I? So that content versus process. And so in the describing what's going on, a tiny little piece of content can be useful. I was having a conversation with my partner that was very charged. That's sufficient content. you could say something about it was charged and I felt like my partner was angry, confused, frustrated, and here's how that landed. It could also be charged with, a different terrain of emotion. So it can be useful to have just a sentence of context, of content, but then start talking about, well, how was that? What did I notice? The response in my system, the kind of the rising of energy, the confusion in the mind, the thoughts of, I need to tell you you're wrong. I mean, whatever you're noticing, that is where the description is in this room, that in terms of describing what you're noticing. Not so much about what he said, what she said, what they did, how I responded, that's more what we're interested in. And so this is useful in this room partly because the context, the story, takes a lot of time, actually. You'd be surprised at how long it can take to tell a little story. It can take even 10 minutes. And we don't have a lot of that time here. And so it helps everybody to have more time for sharing if we don't tell the story. But also taking it into its essence, not all the detail, taking it into its essence, it's like when you take it into an essence, like I was having a charged conversation with my partner, pretty much everybody in this room can relate to that. It's like we don't have to know all the details. And so there's a way in which it's like, yeah, we all have charged conversations. Maybe with our partner, maybe with a friend, maybe with a coworker. We all have charged conversations. And so it's like everybody can kind of land, okay, I know what this is about. And then exploring ways to work with that. So it creates more of a sense of there's more time if we're not going into the story. It creates more of a sense of shared experience to come to the essence of the story. And then it supports us in our meditation to get curious. So if we are being asked to describe experience in this way, stepping aside from the content, that becomes more what our interest is in our observation of experience. We get more interested in, well, how am I with this? How did it affect the situation when I took a breath? You know, we get more interested in the practice realm and more interested in how we are rather than interested in all the details of the content when we are using this as a practice. And so this kind of describing experience, taking the minimal part of content and then how am I with that, is actually a practice to help us get, it's like the verbalizing of what we're trying to do internally. So it supports that internal process to describe and report experience in this way. So far you're doing a good job. So I just wanted to name that.